The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Fire Lotus, those of you who are new. Glad to have you here today. And I just feel like I have so much I want to share with you. We're starting our fall training period we call Ango. So I put things down so I can stay on point and not just yak, but cover what we need to today, which is to introduce some of you to what Ango is. It's a tradition that goes back to the time of the Buddha of intensifying our Dharma practice together. That we can each participate in, some formally, some informally. And you're all welcome to do that. Ango is translated as Ango is peaceful dwelling. And dwelling is to take up residence, but it's not a place, but it's to dwell in peace. That's where we're taking up residence, is in peace within ourselves, stopping our own wars. That's where we have to start. And then radiating that kindness into the entire world. So it's an invitation for us to take up residence and dwell peacefully, walk a path of peace in all our interactions, doing our very best, because we have a lot in us. And we have to put our fights and our anger in a place that serves, okay? Nothing wrong with that energy, but how will it serve? Well. Ango is, as I said, is part of this ancient wisdom tradition since the time of the Buddha. That's where it traces its history. Each year in India, there was the monsoon season where the waters would rise. And usually the practitioners, like you who travel in New York, would go from to different communities to practice, where Buddha had different teachers in different places teaching. And when the waters rose, a lot of the pathways you couldn't get through. So the Buddha would stay in one place and teach, Varanasi usually. I happen to sit on the very spot where the Buddha would be during Ango, which was very thrilling in India. And a university of sorts would be set up. So there would be temporary housing. There would be, you know, like tents put up and huts. So everybody would just stay in one place with the Buddha and all the teachers. And it was also a time where those who had been out traveling could then come back and share what teachings they found or developed, meeting the different sanghas and the different communities. So it was a very exciting and energetic time. And a way to really take refuge in the three treasures, our Buddha mind, our awakened mind, the teachings, the Dharma, and the Sangha, the community, that we all belonged to this community and would come together. And the emphasis was on a collective practice, practicing together. And so Buddha was constantly offering very specific teachings, ways of training to develop, realize, and actualize our wisdom and our compassion, which he said was innate, that these were qualities that we are, and how do we develop them? That's the Dharma practice. How do we develop these qualities when there might be so much within us that has turned against ourselves and each other, and has been fed. And we, of course, the Dharma is a deep examination of our heart and our mind. That is the Dharma, is why do we suffer? And this backward step, this turning inward, looking into what are we doing? What are we doing within ourselves? What do we believe? And what is that bringing us? Is it true? And to deeply question, compassionately inquire, and learn from our actions. So the point of the Anga was to intensify, increase, strengthen, and develop all these useful qualities of mind, mindfulness, alertness, concentration, to be of benefit, generating good will, a loving heart, mind. These are real practices. They're not just words. They're real and true experiences that we need to develop. And we feel like when they're not there, or when we're going against these qualities in ourself, or we so these are called the paramitas, which is our true nature, and I'll go through that, our virtuous qualities. So what qualities do you need to develop? What qualities do I need to develop? And it's not like it ends, like you just get to the end of the development. It's a continuous practice, a continuous process of clarifying, of strengthening prajna, wisdom, the absolute nature, the emptiness of all the five conditions, as we chanted in the Heart Sutra, that can relieve our misfortune and our pain. And it's going to take some time. We all know that, but we're from a McDonald's culture, McDonald's mentality. It's like we want our drive-through, like get our food and like drive away and we've got it. No, like there's a whole process of our life, and really like boring into these words and bringing them to life. So part of what Buddha called this development of these qualities is the customs of the noble ones. That's you. Developing the customs of the noble ones. That we learn how to delight in abandoning whatever we have to abandon, and to delight in developing whatever needs to be developed. So it's interesting that Buddha uses the word delight, right? That we delight in abandoning what we have to abandon, and to delight in developing what needs to be developed. You know, people get a little gruff when they hear Dogen say, Zazen is the gate of ease and joy. It's like we're sitting there sweating, like dealing with our mind. It's like, I don't know, there's some savory expletives that we may want to shout out. But eventually we begin to feel our life and what practice does, and we begin to taste a measure of that joy and that delight, even though it's difficult, that those two things can exist simultaneously. And sometimes that's where the greatest things are for us, is where we resist, where we abandon and check again and want to reclaim. Like those holding this tension of what seems opposing as one essence, one reality. So there's a quote from Buddha speaking to his son, Rahula. He says, he was teaching his son, and he said, look at your actions. Before you act, look at your intentions. If you think what you're going to do or say or think is harmful, you've got to tell yourself, no, don't do that. Sometimes it comes later. It's my experience. I do it and then I feel it and I go, no, don't do that. And then we have to take a responsibility and see what we can do to come in accord with our affinity, to rouse the mind of awakening. He says, if you don't foresee any harm, then you can do it. If while you're doing it, you see that some harm is happening that you didn't anticipate, you stop. Otherwise, you keep on doing it. I mean, Buddha's a pretty good doctor. It's pretty straightforward. And then when you're done, you reflect on the long-term consequences of your actions. If you see that there was any unforeseen harm, then you resolve not to repeat that mistake again. We will. We may have to bring this up many times. If you don't see that there was any harm, then you can take joy in the fact that you're training the mind well and you haven't harmed anybody at all. And then he said, this is how we purify in our actions, and this is where we have to begin, right? So that is practice and training. Practice is what is practice? What is training? Practice may be what you do, how you hear these teachings and practice them. And training is we need to receive wisdom from people who have walked in not just in Buddhism, but in any tradition. There's wisdom everywhere. And then we have to test it within our own body, our own psychology, everything, just to make it alive and true for ourselves. Nobody can give us the truth, in my humble opinion. It's not like there's this thing called the truth and somebody hands you the truth. We make it our truth. But there's a lot of fingers pointing. It's this, it's this, it's this, it's this. Check this out, check this out. Buddha was an incredible guide. Check this out. Check this out. Don't take my word for it. See what it's like as you develop it in your own body and mind. Then you will know for sure. So, he said, because it's only by taking a good, honest look at our actions that we can begin to trust ourselves. Yeah. I was talking to someone about overwhelm, because somebody was saying, I feel so overwhelmed, like I'm so overwhelmed. And I said, when I say that, if I could say that with just like the truth of it, then my overwhelm lets go a little bit. It's just like, yeah, this is true. I feel overwhelmed. And when I say that, I could feel like a little opening there rather than just having it overwhelm. And Dogen has a line in Being Time. I think I've told you this before. It's one of my favorites that I still study. Overwhelm, overwhelms, overwhelming. And he's really speaking about intimacy. Because when we step back from the overwhelm, it becomes like the past and what's going to happen in the future. But we're here. We're here now. Overwhelm, overwhelms, overwhelming. It's an Uji, Being Time. So we each need each other for these pointers and to help each other. So we replicate Ango during this time. It has been a rainy season, like the way it's like one or the it's like there's drying up and there's sinking. So we're kind of tipping funny, but we try and replicate this Ango here at the temple and at the monastery upstate. And I often repeat that to intensify our practice doesn't mean panic. So Some people put those two together. Intensifying means I'm panicked now because I got more to do. It just means to keep push down a bit on your Dharma practice. Intensify a bit. If you've been sitting not at all, maybe you're going to sit for 5 minutes, especially if you're new. Maybe you go home and you say, okay, I don't know what that was. Felt something. Maybe I could sit down with myself for 5 minutes and just start there. And then that may grow, and that's your commitment, right? And some of us, we may be sitting in the morning or not at all, and maybe we need 5 minutes. Or I say, do the 3-minute practice. Like if you're not sitting at all, start with 3 minutes. Put your feet on the floor, and for three breath practice, just follow it all completely. Show up for 3 breaths totally when you wake up and before you go to sleep. Start there. Just can you commit to 3 breaths showing up for the entirety of the whole breath, in and out? It's very powerful. And that may lead to another minute or two. Sometimes we have to trick ourselves because our untrained mind still wants to do what it used to do. And we feel like, God, I should sit down. And then that other squirrely part's like, but I got to do this and this and this and that. And that will always be. That will always be. So just start small. And then it gets contagious. It's a good influenza. One of the best. So intensify means to deepen, right? Deepen our focus, deepen our concentration, increase our Dharma practice. More Dharma is more Dharma. It's just more Dharma. Maybe what you read is more Dharma. That you keep, you learn the mind of Zazen, and you, everything you do is to strengthen that. Where you work, at your bistro, at your insurance company, online, it's all your mind is sitting in reality, right there. That's what you can practice. That's how you can strengthen and intensify, just with more awareness. And remember, too, this takes time and effort and steadiness. And Buddha knew that practicing more intensely gives us more opportunity to recognize the Buddha mind that is steady, that is eternal, this joyful, pure, eternal being. That more practice lets us keep recognizing that potential, that possibility. And don't we need more than ever to be steady? To be steady. Oof. I think, yes, everyone should put on the refrigerator, steady, steady, regardless of the fluctuations externally or conditions, because we can't control externals. So we work with this place, with this dwelling right here. Peace does not mean to be in a place where there's no noise, no trouble, no hard work, but to be in the midst of those things and still be calm in our heart and seeing. So we're encouraged not to get lost in the congestion of our mind. And remember, you have a path. It may be a Buddhist path, but find a path to walk. In my humble opinion, this is a good one. So we start with this body, with this mind, with this speech. Yeah, that's how we create karma. Body, mouth, and thought. So be responsible for this person. So we have a theme for each Ango, and of course, we knew there is going to be an election and lots of things coming in right now, intensifying in other ways. So we wanted to focus our study so that our mind can bring in these teachings and be nurtured by them more and more, that we have something to turn to, that we can guard our introspection in the midst of what we need to do in this world and what's happening. So the theme is going straight on an ever-twisting path, the Bodhisattva path and the Paramitas. There's a miscellaneous koan that students take up is, how do you go straight on a path with 99 curves? How do you go straight on a path with 99 curves? And the teacher will say, show me, don't tell me, show me. Yeah. And the Bodhisattva, there's some new vocabulary you might be learning, is a being, a great being. There's a lot of them sitting here in this room. That makes a vow to liberate all beings before entering nirvana, just going into their own peace, but working on one's own peace for the sake of others until others come across. That was Shakyamuni Buddha's aspiration. The paramitas are sometimes called the perfections, are these aspirations that we practice and that are brought to life. So we'll take up this theme through, and also this word perfection we have to be careful with, because a lot of us have that a bit twisted too on this path. Perfectly imperfect, that our perfections, which are our giving nature, our patience, our moral and ethical life, our concentration, our wisdom, that these are nourished. And this is, we all have these super traits, these great qualities within us. So that's what Buddha was speaking of. So we'll take up through readings from Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. Some of you remember in choir, we sang Shantideva's Way of the Bodhisattva. And I'd like to teach that with everyone, that we chant that more and more here. We won't do that today, but we'll work on that. And we'll look at Master Dogen, who is a seminal Zen teacher in our lineage, fascicle 70, called Arousing the Aspiration for Enlightenment. So those will be other readings that we'll do. And all of this is available online on our website. What is the one thing that bodhisattvas guard? It is this aspiration for enlightenment. For the sake of all, I do it. For the sake of all, I adopt the spirit of awakening. And we'll follow the way of the Bodhisattva, arousing this mind of awakening. What is enlightenment? It's just, we're in darkening, in ignorance of not knowing. And it's not like ignorance is like the enemy. It's just we don't know who we are. And so little by little through practice, there's light that comes when we start to see. So it's not like the 4th of July, like we're going to get dun, 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 and the band's going to play, and we're just going to be like zapped. Like we take a seat in Zazen. It's like my dad's always say, okay, do me. Who? We do. We do. And so there's light that comes all along. Just today, you may have gotten some. Right? And that just opens more and more, sometimes in large degrees, sometimes incrementally, where we begin to see what's true And it, and again, you can't like define that. It's not like, here it is, but it's unmistakable. It is unmistakable in our life. It's the ground also falls out a bit from what we always thought. Just sometimes we feel groundless. And so we have to get used to that feeling as more true, actually. Dogen teaches, this is from Kaz Ta-Nehisi, translating. Arousing the aspiration for enlightenment is making a vow to bring all sentient beings to the shore of awakening, enlightenment, before you bring yourself, and actualizing the vow. Even a humble person who arouses this aspiration is already a guiding teacher of all sentient beings. Isn't that beautiful? Like anyone that has that aspiration is already a guiding teacher. And it's like if one person in a family practices the Dharma, everyone is practicing, but they don't know it. Because you're guiding with this mind of awakening as best you can, wherever we're at, because that's, you're here. It's already in you. No doubt about it. Whether you were just curious and you stay with this, it's already turned. I'm sorry. You can run and find it elsewhere, maybe, perhaps, but something in you is already turned and aroused the mind of awakening. When we go down to the ground and raise our hands, that's raising our Bodhi mind, raising that aspiration. It's a gesture of that. This is Dogen. This aspiration is neither originally existent, nor does it emerge all of a sudden. It is neither one nor many. It is neither spontaneous nor formed gradually. This aspiration is not in yourself, nor are you in it. This aspiration is not pervasive in the world of phenomena. It is neither before nor after. It is neither existent nor non-existent. It is neither self-nature nor other nature. It is neither common nature nor causeless nature. Yet, in response to affinity between teacher and student, and the student, the aspiration for enlightenment arises. It is not given by Buddhas or Bodhisattvas. It is not created by yourself. The aspiration arises in response to affinity, it being in accord with. Thus, it is not spontaneous. Dogen stretches us. The Dharma stretches us. So we also, if we're new to the Dharma, we have to be prepared to be to not understand right away. A part of you will and does, but then there's a part that needs to develop and grow into the Dharma. So we can't depart just because we don't get it. So sometimes we have to chew something for a while, and it begins to get into our cells and our whole being. I used to feel like that when my teacher gave talks, because they were all in English. But I would come away with like this affinity. I would come away with this awakened feeling, but I couldn't say what happened or what it was exactly. Somebody would say, "What did he talk about?" And I was sort of like, "I don't know. I don't know. But I feel it. Something happened. I don't know what that affinity is. It's like Dogen says." Because he doesn't want us to like go for something, right? He takes it away. So we don't rest like, oh, I just need to do this. Oh, it's right here. No, this is something much more, and I don't even want to say mysterious, but how it is. How it is. The meaning of the aspiration for this is Dogen, the meaning of the aspiration for enlightenment is to endeavor without ceasing, in body, speech, and thought, to help all sentient beings to arouse the aspiration of for enlightenment. This leads them to the Buddha way. So this could sound kind of lofty, but it's in very common conversation where we're just raising the level, the vibration of how we're speaking to each other, raising the mind to a level that is this affinity, this awakened mind, it is aroused the best we can. So it's how we talk to someone, how we gesture, how we are. It's all in that. That's how it's transmitted. He's saying you're already a guiding teacher. So when he speaks of in response to affinity between teacher and student, it's you, right? I mean, it's not like you're saying I'm a teacher of the Dharma. No, you're your own teacher of your raising your own Bodhi mind. That's what you're giving. That's what's been exchanged. So this is what we'll be engaging through talks and different ways coming together. We'll have Noble Path talks by some of our Jukai students that will focus too on some aspect of paramitas or things that are happening within the Ango. We have a chief disciple, yay. So sometimes there's a person who's making a transition from a junior to a senior student, and they become just a very humble model of practice. It said those were the ones that cleaned the toilet without us knowing how the bathrooms got cleaned. That was the chief disciple in Japan. But they're a model of practice, and I would like to introduce you to Taisho Sarah Sands, who will be our chief disciple, and she will be the first trans person in our Sangha to be a senior student. Yay! So we welcome a new voice, a new perspective, and this will be very significant in our Sangha. And Taisha will be here. I hope to get her sometime in the Ango, but we do have a retreat scheduled together in December, which we don't know what it will be, but we're working on it. We also take up different gates of practice, our body. So you can have a body practice. We take up the green dragon, eco-sattva work, something, a way to bring attention to the earth and to climate crisis and what we're doing within our own lives. However you want to touch on that, could be with groups, with people. That's powerful. It's a louder voice. There's the Mahasangha event in September, which is all the Buddhist communities of New York City are meeting in Washington. Who said that? Thank you. Washington Square Park. And so it's taking up Thich Nhat Hanh's voice of the next Buddha is the Sangha. It's not a person, it's persons all together, arousing the mind of awakening. So we have, we can go to that. We'll be doing art practice, which as many of you know, that's a focus of mine here at the temple. I feel very important in both seeing our nature, arousing this mind of awakening through expression, studying our expression. So this Ango's art practice will be, here's a quote from Mary Oliver, "Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight." This is from her poem on being mindful. So for this art practice, the emphasis will be on direct sensation as the source of creation. Direct sensation. A meditation on sensory awareness, experience our breath, a sense of touch, all of the other sensations of everyday life, and allowing them to influence whatever medium we'll work with. I'm already thinking of things, but so I'm going to do some practices here. I might have a daily practice if you want to come in and practice that together. We've been doing drawing before you know it. It's kind of in vain like that. Before we know what a thing is, how do we bring fresh eyes? I put in the write-up a quote from Cézanne who said, "The day is coming when a single carrot, freshly observed, will set off a revolution." So that kind of mind helps us to see those we live with all the time differently, our partners, our meetings. Before we know it, it's not like we have to play dumb or we don't know things, but that doesn't overload and carry over our direct sensory experience. So we'll see what we have. She says, "It was what I was born for." This is Mary Oliver. "To look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclimation." So that will keep us afloat. Instruct ourselves over and over in joy and acclimation. Because we have a lot in us in different ways. So we have to find some measure. We can find some measure of that. Discovering a natural language that can express a state of being with immediacy. Let through this living force that moves through all things and at the same time is a joyful reunion with our own life force and the wisdom of this body-mind. So how do we pay attention to tangible sensations without judging expectations, goals? How might we see, smell, feel things that are familiar with a fresh look, a fresh touch, a fresh listen? Sometimes it's called beginner's mind, right? How can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these, says Mary Oliver. So just a little preview of some of the programs and ceremonies we'll be doing here at the temple that you can come to. We'll do renewal of vows ceremony, which is called Fusatsu, renewing our vows and taking responsibility for mostly our karma, mostly harmful karma, so that we can become atone. We call it atonement. Atone means as the two words at one, not separate from our actions before the karma we've created in the past as it sets up our future actions. And again, that's not something that happens just by saying a chant. But we have to, at one, quite frequently, say yes to what happened in our life, whether it was from us or came to us in our karma. How do we meet that? That's what Fusatsu brings to light. We'll do mandos, question and responses together. I haven't done much of that, but I'd like to try with you. I'm feeling like I would like to stretch a little myself and go to the places that scare me as a teacher. But you've got good eyeballs, and I think we can do this together. I think it'll be helpful to hear each other in such a way. Do Dharma Encounter, which is, you know, some people go for face-to-face teaching, as you saw this morning with the teacher, and we'll do it publicly. So it'll be live, and where I don't know what you're going to bring and you don't know what I'm going to bring. And we're just meeting in the Dharma in that encounter. I'll be doing a retreat to introduce the paramitas. So if you want to learn about them, that's going to be in 2 weeks, an introduction to the paramitas. So we can kind of set the ground for how they evolved, what are they, and begin to kind of look at them within our life and see how they're functioning, where these qualities. Doing a precepts retreat. So if you are interested in the moral and ethical teachings of the tradition, you can come to the precepts retreat. Gokhan will be coming, doing a practice on loving ourselves and trusting our practice, something that we tend to skip over, like we talk about no self, no self, no self, but there is one in a particular way, and we should love it so we can move it through to others and not forget about this aspect of ourself that needs loving kindness and trust. Gokhan is my Dharma brother, and he's a Dharma holder in the tradition. And then I invited Laura Sims. Laura is a storyteller. She's in Central Park. And I know when you read it, you might say, like, storytelling retreat. But we say a lot in Zazen, like, let go of the storyline, stop your stories. Yes, and our stories are important. It's how we share information. It's how we grow. It's how we can deal with our grief and our sorrow and move to a different place with this arousing of the aspiration of the Bodhi mind. So Laura is going to bring some stories, because I scheduled it just before election. And these stories, the humming tree, is going to help us recognize some things. So I hope that you might be interested. And Laura I met over 35 years ago at the monastery, took her storytelling retreat at the monastery. And she has influenced me to this day in storytelling. And I got an email, we got an email on our feeder of Laura Sims doing something in Central Park. And I'm like, she's still going, of course. And she was so happy to reconnect and come here. So she's a student of Chungyun Trungpa Rinpoche and Shambhala for many years. So we'll have some Zazen and story. Daily Zazen. So once you've had beginning instruction, you can come and sit here. Most mornings and evenings, we start Tuesday night through Friday night. And we sit 2 periods. So you can come and sit. And we'll do Zazenkai, all-day sits, half-day sits, eco-sattva work, as I mentioned. Okay, and today we will do an Ango entering ceremony where whoever is present in this Zendo today can make a commitment to walk a path of peace, offer incense, to dwell peacefully in your life, in this world, be of benefit, and freely participate in whatever you would like to here at this temple or online. What we do, however we act, speak, move, we can each ask, does this support life? Does it harm? And know it and choose the best we can. It won't be perfect. And it will be. It will be. So the way this will unfold now, let me see what time it is. Perf. I stayed on tact. We're going to chant the Jizo Shingon Dharani. So Jizo is a bodhisattva for travelers, voyagers, children, mothers, and really all beings, but those in particular, protector, Jizo Bodhisattva. So we're going to chant a simple chant, Ka Ka Kabisa Ma E Soa Kao, again and again. And everyone will just come up by rows. There'll be incense boxes, and whoever's lighting them can start now. We'll put incense out, and you just come up, and there's powdered incense and a burning charcoal. So you just take a pinch, and we unite it with this part of our forehead right here, mind to mind, and we then put that out to burn out. Okay? So if you want to, please don't take a big clump. With all of us offering, it's going to get, so just take some, a little pinch, and put it on. Some of you are making formal commitments, and that's a little bit different. That has some requirements, so it has a little bit of a squeeze, some participation in sessions and a number of touches with the monastery or the temple. But then we can also participate informally as we develop our practice and maybe move into more formal. So as the incense is being lit, I would just like to take a moment for us to each be silent and just kind of reflect inside on our own path, our own intentions, and just kind of clear out and make that forefront so that when you come forward, and you don't have to, it's up to you, you totally can just stay where you are. That's fine too, okay? So you're here. But if you would like to, just to bring that into mind.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.